As a local trial continues with a transgender student suing over bathroom rights, the Pentagon now says it will follow a court order and continue to allow transgender troops to serve in the military. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9 on the radio. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and through our app. Just ahead, the issue of transgender rights takes center stage, both here on the First Coast and when it comes to our troops in the field. A closer look coming up, and you can get on the line right now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, it's our book club today on the show, as our book club blogger, Stacey Goldring, goes inside the pages of the novel Snow by Turkish legend Orhan Pamuk. Plus, a giant holiday display goes up this weekend in Five Points, but it will be like nothing you've ever seen before. We'll tell you about Brighter Together, all of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, two important stories we're following right now about transgender rights. Transgender Nice High School student Drew Adams took the stand Monday in his federal lawsuit filed against the St. Johns County School District. Now, Adams wants to use the boys' bathroom at Nice, but he has been ordered to use a single-stall gender-neutral bathroom instead. Just as that trial gets underway, the Pentagon on Monday also announced that they would abide by the ruling of a federal court judge. That judge placed a stay on President Trump's order several months ago by tweet banning transgender personnel from serving in the military. To discuss all of these issues and others affecting the LGBT community, we welcome Caitlin Legg. She's director of the LGBT Resource Center at the University of North Florida, and she's on the line. Caitlin, thanks for joining the show.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for leading this conversation.
Sure. And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the latest development on transgender troops in the military? And what are your questions about the federal lawsuit that's been filed against the St. Johns County School District over one transgender student's battle to use the boys' bathroom? Get on the line now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also let us know how you feel on our Facebook page. And Caitlin Legg, in a minute, we'll talk about the ruling from the federal judge that involves federal troops serving in the military, transgender troops, I should say. But first, let's talk about this lawsuit. This student at Nice High School, Drew Adams, filing a federal lawsuit so that he can have access to the boys' bathroom. The judge in the case, federal judge Timothy Corrigan, will have to decide if St. Johns County's policy violates federal Title IX education laws and the 14th Amendment equal protection guarantees that prevent schools from discriminating against students based on sex. So Drew Adams took the stand Monday and told the courtroom why he's doing what he's doing. You've been following this case. What are your initial thoughts?
Mm-hmm. You know, what I think is really interesting about this case is the challenges that we see in terms of actual policy and practice in our education system. So Drew had actually been using the boys' restroom for over a year before another student made an anonymous complaint. So that decision to force him to use the unisex bathroom happened after a year of no issues. And so in this situation, the school didn't actually have a rule on the books. They stated that they would provide a unisex restroom for transgender students, but not that it was a conduct issue or that a student couldn't use the restroom. And so, you know, in this situation, Drew would actually be considered to be participating in misconduct, even though there was no written policy. And so I think there's a lot of confusion when we're looking at Title IX and equitable access to facilities. Under Obama administration, we had a lot of clarification about protections of rights for transgender students. And so a lot of schools had already started following that. And then earlier in the year, the Trump administration rescinded that guidance. And so now we're just across the country, we're seeing cases like this where students' rights are up in the air.
Up in the air. This is a federal lawsuit, though, so depending on how the judge rules, this could have mm-hmm. set a precedent for other schools, whether they grant transgender students more access to restrooms that correspond with their gender identity, or whether mm-hmm. schools say, look, using the gender-neutral restroom that we have available is constitutional. This case could mm-hmm. be significant, couldn't it?
Absolutely. This decision could influence how other schools are making these decisions as well. And I know in this case, a school leader from Louisville actually testified about what they're doing, and they're allowing students who are transgender to use the restroom that they identify with because they see it as an issue of that student's privacy, as well as just fair access. And so what some schools are doing is saying if a student who's not transgender is uncomfortable with that, they're allowed to go and use a private restroom separate. And so we're going to see with this case how that will actually play out for other schools now.
All right. And the number to join us as we talk about this lawsuit in St. Johns County and the issue of transgender troops in the military is 549-2937. Caitlin Legg, let's talk about the other big story involving transgender Americans. Transgender recruits will be allowed to enlist in the military beginning January 1st. This from the Pentagon. As President Trump's ban on transgender troops has suffered new legal setbacks. Three federal courts have ruled against the president, including one yesterday in Washington State. So the Pentagon, it seems, is going along with these court decisions rather than trying to fight them. Is that your assessment of this?
Oh, definitely. And I think, it's really connected to the Department of Defense's very comprehensive study on this issue, which began in July of 2015. And they already found that there would be no major negative morale impacts or budgetary impacts for our armed forces. And so I think at this point, they don't see a reason to fight these decisions.
There are already transgender troops serving who have been, their status has been up in the air as well since the mm-hmm. president, and he announced it via tweet that he was mm-hmm. going to ban transgender troops from the military. So for mm-hmm. Several months now, these troops have really not known what their status is. Is that correct?
That's correct. When that tweet came out, I know many transgender service members who I consider my friends, and at that point, they didn't know what their livelihoods would be. They're qualified and capable members of our armed forces, and yet they don't know if they're going to be able to continue to serve, what their health insurance will look like. And then on top of that, just the level of stigma and really the demeaning nature of those tweets about people who are incredibly qualified and have put their lives on the line for our country.
It seems remarkable that the Pentagon is disregarding a direct order from the executive.
Mm-hmm.
How unusual! Yeah. How unusual is that?
I'm not an expert in terms of military service, but it is really interesting to see. And there's actually a report from the Palm Center that came out a few days ago, written by leaders across the armed forces. And they actually stated that this the tweet from President Trump was really a revision of the history of what we've already been doing in our country regarding policy. So we're in terms of gender identity and transgender people, we're in some uncharted territory with this conversation.
Let's go to your calls now. What are your questions about the lawsuit, a federal lawsuit in St. Johns County that could have wide-ranging impacts over the rights of transgender high school students? And what's your reaction to the Pentagon's announcement about permitting transgender troops to serve or continuing to serve? The number to join the show is 549-2937. Adam is in Arlington right now. Hey, Adam, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
All right, thanks.
Great. Yeah, no, I was just calling. I just want to say I'm 100% in support of trans serving in our armed forces. I think this is just another shameful, non-fact-based decision by the executive branch. And, you know, I just really think it's a step in the wrong direction, especially by someone who wasn't willing to serve himself. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for that. Supporters of transgender rights in this country were hailing the decision from the Pentagon. Caitlin Legg, critics say, and they've said all along, that allowing transgender troops to serve will have a detrimental effect on military cohesion, will cause confusion. What would you say to the arguments against this? And they have been voiced vocally as well.
Yeah, so that's something that I've heard from opposition as well. And I would say, you know, we could even look back a few years to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and these conversations about lesbian and gay service members. But we, you know, that was repealed. We haven't had major issues in terms of lesbian and gay service members. And I think that given the opportunity to serve openly and continue serving openly as transgender folks, we won't see that impact on cohesion. And again, that Department of Defense study found the same thing.
Tell me a little bit more about the results of the study, the DOD study.
So the DOD study, which was really quite comprehensive, looked at exactly the concerns that people are voicing about cohesion within units, about morale within units, about the impact that this could have on the budget, you know, everything from the paying for health insurance. That's been an issue that's come up a lot, looking at issues around concerns about mental health. And in all these cases, they have data to back up that these aren't major concerns, and that allowing, again, capable, healthy transgender people to serve facing the same requirements as everybody else is actually a benefit. And, you know, I was listening to an interview with a transgender leader from the Army, and she was saying that when she had the opportunity to transition and continue her service, she knew that she was actually finally doing the best that she could for her country because she was able to live openly. She had that level of self-confidence and authenticity where she felt like she could go in and do the best job. So when we're supporting policy that allows our service members to be who they are and feel a part of that the unit, that's where the cohesion comes from.
And if you're just tuning in, what are your thoughts about both the local and national transgender stories we're following on the show today? Here's a quick question to callers. Do you think high school students who are transgender should be allowed to use the bathroom that corresponds to their gender identity? That's the issue that's at the heart of this federal lawsuit, and the number to join us is 549-2937. We'll go to a few more calls in a moment, but Caitlin Legg, for those who, many Americans, as the T in LGBT, transgender Americans, have really tried to educate the public about their situation, tried to fight for their rights in court and in the court of public opinion, I think it's fair to say that millions and millions of Americans still don't have a firm understanding of what transgender is and and why people decide to transition from one gender to the other. Could you talk a little bit more about that, please?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of confusion out there and a lot of misconceptions about what it means to be transgender. And that confusion is completely normal. Many Americans have never met a transgender person, or they don't think they have. There's actually an interesting statistic I heard a couple of years ago where more Americans think that they've seen a ghost than know a transgender person. So that's where we're at right now as a country. But at the end of the day, being a transgender person just means that who you deeply know yourself to be in terms of your gender does not align with what your birth certificate says. It's not the same. You don't just wake up one day and decide, oh, I'm a boy or I'm a girl. This is a deeply held understanding of who you are. And most transgender people report this understanding of themselves at a young age. So anywhere between you know, being able to have your first memory through being a toddler or a elementary school age. So, you know, but there's fear and misconception in the general population that there's going to be issues in the bathroom with a predator or something like that. At the end of the day, transgender people are actually some of the most at-risk individuals for these kinds of attacks that people are concerned about.
And the fight over bathrooms goes mm-hmm. beyond this issue with this teen in St. John's County. Mm-hmm. There have been battles mm-hmm. over bathrooms all over the country.
Absolutely. And I think for a lot of listeners today probably remember these conversations during the human rights ordinance debates locally about if we should protect LGBT people against discrimination in Jacksonville. And that did get passed in February. But one of the main concerns that opposition brought up was this concern that transgender people or people pretending to be transgender would go into restrooms and particularly women's restrooms and attack women. And we know that that's not the case. That's just a very big myth. But unfortunately, it has caught a lot of steam in our country in terms of that fear tactic. And in Jacksonville, we haven't heard any reports of these attacks happening after our HRO was passed. And that's true for other states or other municipalities as well.
So for the student in Nice High School, Drew Adams, he's arguing that he should be allowed to use the boys' bathroom because to use the gender-neutral bathroom is inconvenient for him and that he's being unfairly treated. What about the other side of the argument that attorneys for the St. John's County schools are putting forth? They are saying that they're only constitutionally obligated to provide a gender-neutral restroom. What does legal precedent say about that?
We've seen in other cases similar lawsuits. I think Massachusetts had one over the past year, and they've ruled in the favor of the transgender student. A lot of it comes down to issues of equitable access. So if you have multiple boys and girls restrooms across the school, but maybe just a couple gender-neutral restrooms, it impacts the student's ability to stay hydrated, eat properly throughout the day, because they're always having to plan ahead to think about, okay, which restroom is going to be closest? When will I have the opportunity or ability to use that? The general student population doesn't have to think about that concern. So at the end of the day, a lot of this has to do with just making sure that a student can go to school and focus on what they're there for, which is to get an education and get good grades.
Right. And so as you watch this lawsuit play out, let's talk for a minute as well about how we can expect the military to roll forward with the Pentagon's directive. Before this goes into effect January 1st, potential transgender recruits will have to overcome a strict set of physical, medical, and mental conditions before they can enlist to serve. These are potentially new recruits. Is that a change from before?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know all the details of that, but from what I know with the military in general, that's absolutely, common for anyone who wants to serve. And so, my thought on that is that it should be equitable. Transgender people should have to meet the same standards mentally and physically in terms of their health for participating in the armed forces. But it shouldn't be another hoop to jump through that's higher or more complex than everybody else.
And this isn't final, by the way. The Department of Justice has asked a federal appeals court to intervene and put this January 1 start date on hold. This is continuing to be battled out in court to a degree, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep, you're correct.
Okay, so we'll follow the trial. We'll follow the Pentagon's directive. And we so appreciate you joining us with your thoughts. Thanks for being on the line with us today.
Awesome. Thank you, Melissa.
Caitlin Legg is director of the LGBT Resource Center at the University of North Florida. Much more still ahead later. Lighting up Five Points this weekend with an interactive display that reaches high into the sky. We'll tell you about the new project, Brighter Together. But up next, our book club peeks inside the pages of the acclaimed Turkish novel, Snow. Back in a moment.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Hey there, it's Joshua Johnson with a quick question. Are you a good listener? I guess you say you are, but why is it that at a time when we can consume more news and listen to more radio than ever, many of us have just stopped listening to each other? Every day on 1A, we'll champion your right to speak freely, and we know you're ready to talk. So join me, Joshua Johnson, next time on 1A from WAMU and NPR. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Catherine Burns, one of the hosts of the Moth Radio Hour, and I hope you'll join us here on 89.9 WJCT. With true personal stories told live without notes to standing room crowds around the world, Moth stories aren't part of the disposable daily information flow. They stick with you, and you'll even find yourself retelling them. Listen Saturdays at 3 p.m. here on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
Welcome back. Well, it's been called essential reading for our times. An engrossing tale looking at the conflict between the forces of Westernization and the forces of Islamists in a Middle Eastern country. Snow is the 7th novel from the Turkish writer Orhan Pamuk, and it's our selection this month on the book club here on the show. Our leader, Stacey Goldring, loves Snow, and she's going to tell us why. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Melissa?
I'm always so happy to see you. Thank you for coming.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here and talk about this very important author.
It is important, and it's timely, because lots of Americans care about these dynamics in the Middle East. Before we talk about that, though, let's give you some snaps for your big event that you just had out at the Neptune Beach Public Library.
Yes.
Tell me about it.
It was wonderful. What we did was we had a discussion about Shel Silverstein's The Giving Tree. And it was an adult discussion. But you know what happened is some people came out multi-generationally.
Really? You have fans across the generations.
Well, you know, I had, you know, the grandparents, the parents, and the littles. And it was so nice because the grandparents, you remember Free to Be You and Me?
Sure,
remember
Marlo Thomas.
Yeah. Hi, I'm a baby. What are you, you know? Anyway, we had that generation, and then we had what we would consider the younger group, and now those younger group, they're having babies. So to get the the impact that this book had on each individual, because it was truly a discussion. One person talked about how the book helped her through a divorce.
Nice.
Another person talked about how they felt it was important for parenting. And there was my research up into the event focused on that. This is an author. There was no social media when Shel Silverstein was writing. It was all, I guess I want to say linear, how you would find out about him. And he didn't give a lot of interviews. He had a tragic life. But he created such beautiful prose and such wonderful art that affected now three generations, because it's a great book to even give to someone who is about to embark on a new adventure, be it parenthood, be it singlehood, be it a new job. Shel Silverstein's work has universality, and I think that's what brings people back to this book. It's like the 50th anniversary. It keeps on getting printed, and it's also been banned.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. And of course, you would know that. So your fame grows. I heard you had a great turnout. Stacey Goldring, of course, is such a superstar, leading our book club here on the show for 5 years now. And thanks to her talents, the Jacksonville Public Library is our partner in the First Coast Connect Book Club. So whatever book Stacey's reading this month or any month, they have extra copies of it available on all of their shelves. And this month, your selection is a novel called Snow.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any snow in this area right now.
No, I thought it'd be appropriate to have a book called Snow during December, because
yes,
I believe talking about snow in December in Florida is the only way I want to be related with anything below 32 degrees ever, unless it's ice clinking and a G&T. This book, it's a book of East versus West. It's a book of searching for identity. You know, America, or the United States, is a very young country. We're barely in diapers compared to the country of Turkey, which is so steeped in history. And think about where they are on the map. So you can, if you visualize Turkey, it connects Europe, Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. So if you're in the middle, if you're the nexus, if you're the intersection, there's a lot going on. There's cross-pollination of trade, culture, religion. And this really came together, and it really sparkled during the Ottoman Empire. After that, we come up to the, I'm going to really fast forward through history, and I know every history professor out there is cringing, but if you can fast forward then to World War I, when we have a time where things are getting, chunks and pieces are being divided and conquered between, you know, France and England, et cetera. And what happens is Turkey does not want to be chopped up into a million pieces and become territories and this, that, and the other. And they exert their independence. Now, if you have all that history behind you, the beautiful history of the Islamic traditions, the beautiful histories of, you know, seeing the Chinese influence through the Silk Road, or understanding the African influence coming forward, or the French, the Western Enlightenment. If you have all this layered on top of you, who are you? Who are you, and who do you want to be? And something really weird happened when I started talking about the book. I think it was a week ago now. I opened up the New York Times, and who has a column on the opinion page but Orhan Pamuk? First of all, I barely knew how to pronounce his name before I got started. And then, and I call this—
The writer of Snow.
Yeah, and I call this Biblionexu. But, you know, I had no context for Snow. And I am fortunate enough to be involved with a multi-denominational book group. So I was able to ask the members if anyone had lived in Turkey. And someone did, and approached me and said, "I'm so glad you're reading Pamuk." And I said, "I have no context. Like, you know, what's going on here? You know, he's a Nobel Prize winner, 2016, for the body of his work." And she said, "You know, he's a little bit of a troublemaker. He's a secularist. However, we all read him."
He's loved in Turkey.
Yeah.
What's the plot of Snow?
So the plot of Snow is a novel about someone writing a novel about a journalist who goes to Kars, which means Bridge. And the name of our main character is Ka, which means snow. And he is filled with dualities. He's said to be going to Kars to cover the suicides of girls who want to wear headscarves. But really, is he going there because there's a girl? And every step of the way, it's almost like The Alchemist or Voltaire's Candide. He makes stops along the way with all the people in town who he thinks will help him get to the bottom of the suicides. But he ends up learning that Turkey is very frustrated with who they are. And we know that just listening to the news with what's happening with Erdogan, and it's kind of moving towards a more religious observant state. And a lot of people do not want it to be that way. They want it to be more Western. And I can understand arguing about that if you've only been together for 100 or 200 years. But when you are steeped in history that goes back thousands, it's hundreds and hundreds of years to the Ottoman Empire and prior, it makes for a lot of frustration. And I'm not defending Erdogan. I'm not taking a side. The book groups are not political, which is super hard to do in a book.
Yeah,
but this is what happens in a book group. This is what happens when you get together a bunch of people with differing opinions and you learn from one another, because you open saying, you know, we all care about what's happening in Turkey. Not really. Some people don't. They really don't. And that's okay. But they come to the book group anyway to learn from one another. And that's the beauty of literature.
So this book really is a mirror into what's happening not just in Turkey, but in other Middle Eastern countries where those who are arguing for more secular culture and a more Western cosmopolitan culture are fighting the hardline Islamists who want a more strict interpretation of Islamic law to govern their nations.
Or the Islamists would say they are fighting the hardline secularists who are throwing away hundreds of years of their beliefs and customs and cultures in order, you know, to have an iPhone and, you know, binge on The Crown, which I did all weekend. You know, so, you know, it's the it's this push me, pull me. And the frustration not only lay in this theme of the book is frustratingly hard to read. It's not an easy read. First of all, it is translated from the Turkish. And so you have to get over that hurdle. And anytime you read a translation, you wonder what gets lost. Secondly, there was a lot of criticism of the translation because it sounded too American. According to British critics on Snow, the book sounded too American. So think about it. I'm not saying it had words like y'all in it or, you know, get her done or whatever. But there were no whilsts or whatever, you know, British people say. So think about when you're a translator, that fine line you have to walk. I guess it's with you in broadcasting, too. You don't want to sound like you're a Buckeye or, you know, you're from Vermont.
You're supposed to sound like you're from nowhere.
Yeah.
Or at least that used to be how it was. So these two girls that commit suicide.
There's three.
The official line given is that they did it because they wanted to wear their headscarves.
Right.
But the protagonist finds out that's not the reason.
Well,
why?
Well, yes. And the girls want to claim their independence. So follow me here because it's difficult. They want to wear the hijab. They want to have the right to wear the hijab because they are, that is who they are. Whereas we come into the book as Americans living in Jacksonville, Florida, we come to the book and think, well, wouldn't you want to remove the headscarf? Wouldn't that be your identity? That is who you are. But we've got to stop and think about the culture and think about the layers that are involved with the donning of this hijab and what that means to those girls who want to maintain their independence and say, this is who I am. It's tricky. You know, they're dealing with this in France, too. You know, it is so incredibly it's so incredibly difficult. You know, there's a journalist in this book. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a journalist, and he meets Ka, and Ka sees that the journalist, the editor, has already printed the paper that's supposed to come out next. And in that paper, it says that Ka is going to recite a poem in Cars, and it's going to be called Snow. And Ka has writer's block. He hasn't been able to write for years. And he says to the editor, there's no way. First of all, why are you printing things before they happen? He doesn't use the term, you know, that's not really news, but he does imply, why are you making up the news? And the editor replies, don't worry. Trust me. You're gonna end up doing a poem called Snow. And lo and behold, he does. So what does that tell you? That tells you that an expatriate like Ka, or an expatriate anywhere, when you can't go home again, because he had ideals of what Cars was like. But someone who has been there, who has been through the wars, who has been through the coups, and there was just one last summer, they know the story. So is it a free press or isn't it a free press? It's supposed to be a free press. Is Ka coming to Cars because he wants to report on these suicide girls, or is he in love and he wants to rekindle that? And this is what the author calls his hidden symmetries in the book. And that's why it's called Snow, because if you think about the snowflake, and you can't see this if you're listening, but the snowflakes have certain accesses, and the accesses are built on what is called the tree of knowledge. And he takes the tree of knowledge precepts and he puts them in a snowflake. You know, every snowflake is different. So that's the individuality of Turkey or humanity. Every snowflake is ethereal. It's here and then it's gone. That speaks to our mortality. The snow, it's almost spiritual in its beauty. The snow can hold you in. And what happens in this book is it takes place over a series of a few days, because no one can get in or out of Cars because of a snowstorm. So we could sit here and analyze snow and what it means in literature. In addition, this author is so incredibly well-read that you can see what he's drawing in other books. I mentioned Thomas Wolfe, You Can't Go Home Again. He is drawn in Camus. I mentioned Voltaire. There are so many books that... If you are in a book group where you do read and you start to read for a while, it's kind of like a cocktail party and you start running into the same people. Mm. You start running into the same themes. I highly recommend the book, and it's going to be hard. So call me and I'll go out for a coffee with you and we can discuss it. But this is where art lives. This is where literature, good discussion lives. When it is hard, when maybe we don't care so much about Turkey, maybe it's difficult to understand. The words are too hard to pronounce. That's where the discussion happens, and that's where the learning happens.
It sounds as though that's some of the pushback you've gotten from some of your book club members about this book.
Yeah.
Snow.
Yeah.
Maybe they want an easier read.
Are you trying to tell me something?
I'm guessing.
Okay. We've been down this road. You know, I like most of my authors very, very dead, because I feel they have
very, very dead.
Because then they have stood the test of time.
Yes, yes.
And when you are asking someone to commit to 10, 12, 20 hours of reading a book, I better hit it right. I have hit it wrong. Remember when we discussed Brief History of Seven Killings about Jamaica? I had scars everywhere. But HBO picked it up and it's going to be a series. So wait.
So you were vindicated.
I was.
You know, you can pick them. Look, you're not a book club book all star by accident. You know what you're doing.
By injury.
When you pick a book, I know this. When you pick a book, I know that it is going to be worth my time and everybody else's time to read, because you don't pick bad books. You pick fascinating, provocative books.
Here's the thing. Here's the key. And anyone that has a book club out there, you know, listen up, because it's a very simple formula. Books and literature are a springboard to conversation. Books, if you read, if you don't fear education, but you embrace the written word, what happens? You learn from one another. You could look, if I had to read a Maeve Binchy, or Danielle Steele, oh, I would complain, and I would probably get like ticks and a limp. However, you can find room to learn in that. And a long time ago, when I was quite young and wasn't thinking straight, I used to say to my book groups, you know, we're going to read Proust. It's going to happen. You wait and see. And then I realized, as members would come up to me and would say, can you pick something that's not so depressing? Can you pick something that's not so dark? But I realized, you know what? I have to temper my taste as well. So the upcoming season, you will see that we are reading about authors who are very aerobic. They breathe, they live in our culture, they live on planet Earth, and they're what I may call a light read, but you need that too. And you know, I need it too. I know that we can't, you know, every book cannot be a total existential experience as much as I would love that to be. I realize that in order to connect with others, I've got to be willing to try new stuff too. Oh, I can't believe I've mentioned Danielle Steele on the radio. Okay, moving forward.
Now, the yes. San Marco Bookstore is the physical location for your book club.
You can find Snow there.
So are you doing any talks about Snow at the San Marco
That's
Bookstore?
That's been done.
You already did that.
We have that. That's why I said call me for coffee or I'll meet you at the bookstore.
And by the way, I'm getting off topic, but did you see the San Marco Bookstore is trying to get Tom Hanks to do something for
brilliant,
them?
Brilliant.
What is that all about?
Well, evidently, I don't know if it was UPS, maybe Desiree from the bookstore could call and let me know exactly what happened, but she had books ordered, the new Tom Hanks book, and you know, she made a promise, and either Hanks's publisher did not come through, or UPS, or I don't know, United Postal Service, whoever. I don't want to place blame, and I don't have my sources, but I do know that she wanted to keep her promise to get these books to her customers.
Yeah, I'm looking at their Twitter page, and it looks like they wrote Tom Hanks a letter
and said
that they wanted 10 signed copies of Tom's book, Uncommon Type.
Right, right.
But never got the order.
Right.
So
could you please kind of give a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and tell your publisher to get those books to the bookstore? And you know, I love that. You know, you got it. What do they call escalate? You know, when you call the cable and you start to get a headache on the phone. And she is escalated. And hopefully either Hanks will respond or their publicist or someone will respond. I find if you are sincere.
Here's what they tweeted Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks, you've got mail. It's not a Toy Story, and there's no crying in baseball, but I've been sleepless in Jacksonville, still hoping you'll sign 10 books. You're in a league of your own, and you'd make a big splash if you do that thing you do. Or I might end up a castaway on Polar Express. If he doesn't respond to that,
I know.
That's just going to ruin Christmas.
Now it is on NPR. Tom, if you are out there, it's 10 books. You can send it media mail and it'll be super duper cheap. So just try to help out the written word.
That's right. And you can see Stacy at the San Marco Bookstore every month when she does book groups. And you can listen to her every month on this program. By the way, the Jacksonville Public Library is our partner in the book club.
They
here
will
on
have
the
Snow
show,
as well.
And they'll have copies of Snow by Orhan Pamuk.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Mr. Pamuk as the guy who got going with Mary on Downton Abbey. Remember that?
Oh, that's right. Oh, my gosh.
He was good looking.
Was he Turkish? Oh, my gosh.
He was Turkish.
Yeah, Pamuk. Woohoo.
Ooh, he was hot stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
didn't
end so well, though. Get a copy of Snow at the library or at your favorite local bookseller if you possibly can, and follow Stacy online at Chapter End Notes. It's always great to see you.
Great to see you too. Merry Christmas.
Merry
happy
Christmas
New Year.
And happy holidays and happy reading in a moment. Lighting up 5 points in a whole new way. That's right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Michael Cavendish and Cavendish Partners, PA. Intelligent management of lawsuits for companies, investors, and executives. Offices in downtown Jacksonville. On the web at cavpartners.com.
It's hard to overstate how important Jerusalem is to Christians, Jews, and Muslims. Over the centuries, it's been conquered, destroyed, and rebuilt. President Trump's decision to officially recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital is already having deadly consequences. What does Jerusalem mean to the world? And why does the rest of the world disagree with Mr. Trump's move? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air.
Who is the greatest?
We are the greatest.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Positive.
Yeah.
Infinitive.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
We'll be joined by three members of Ranky Tanky, which performs contemporary versions of songs from the Gullah tradition of the Georgia and South Carolina Sea Islands, music linked to West Africa. They'll perform in the studio. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
There's always something new happening in your community and your world. Whether it's Morning Edition tackling topical concerns in a smart, thoughtful way, or First Coast Connect introducing you to local artists and innovators, you can always count on WJCT to share a world of exploration with you. Make a year-end donation to ensure the programs you cherish and rely on continue to thrive throughout the year to come. Give online now at WJCT.org.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, this is billed as an interactive holiday event designed to bring people together. Brighter Together is going to do just that. And on a massive scale, this weekend in Five Points over in Riverside. Now, this digital projection, as it's called, is going to light up Five Points and be multiple stories high. Kedgar Volta and Joash Burnett are the creators of Brighter Together. And they're here now to tell us all about this. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Hello, Melissa.
Good morning.
Good morning. So this is a holiday light display, but it's digital. Is that right? So how is this going to work? What's it going to look like?
Well, basically, it's going to be what we'd like to think is going to be a dazzling light show over projected onto, if you're familiar with the Presbyterian Apartments on Oak Street, directly across from the Bread and Board restaurant. And the way it's going to work is it's going to be visible from throughout Five Points, but we're going to have an activation and staging area where people, two at a time, are going to get into our activation area. And thanks to some sensors and some other technology, we're going to be activating a particle light projection that people will be able to manipulate through their movement. And so essentially, they're going to be creating this very massive, on a massive scale, this light show that's going to mimic
with their bodies.
With their bodies, correct.
But it'll read on the building as just beautiful lights.
Yes, it'll take, essentially the lights will kind of coalesce into the shape of the participants. And from that point forward, the lights will mimic their movement. So it becomes a sense, it becomes a chance for people to kind of affect the Jacksonville cityscape with their own movement and whatever emotion or, fun they're trying to have at the moment.
It sounds fantastic. Kedgar Volta, how did you guys come up with this concept?
Every year we try to give back to the community, and this year is not an exception. It started in September. We started to think about, well, what can we do? And this year has been a very difficult year. It's been a divisive year. So we wanted to create something that just brings people together. It doesn't matter where you stand on politics, where you stand up on religion. Just put all that aside and come together. If it's a stranger, even better, and just enjoy the moment and enjoy the time.
How difficult was it logistically to pull this off? It sounds pretty ambitious.
Well, first of all, you had to have some support. This wouldn't have been able, as much as you understand being at WJCT, this wouldn't be possible without the support generous sponsors. So we had to get buy-in on that level. Actually, the city, we spoke with the City of Jacksonville Special Events Department. For this type of kind of artistic experience that you can let people have in a public setting, you'd actually be surprised at the level of the you don't really need a ton of permitting for something like this.
Okay, because it's just lights on a projected onto a building.
Right, and it's very hard to classify light in and of itself as a as a physical object unless you get into like protons and
that type of stuff. So it's not exactly disrupting traffic.
Yeah. Right. The biggest challenge was just actually. Time-wise, this kind of came up in our heads. Kind of, we had this idea late in the game, so we've just been scrambling to make it all happen.
You just came up with this one day. Oh, I think I'll do a massive light projection over 5 points. Yeah, no sweat.
It was pretty that way.
Well, that's great.
I think we're always looking for ways. You know, what we really do is we try to create. We kind of try to mix art, technology, and fun. To give people a chance to have a participatory experience in what we do.
Now, when people come out, and this kicks off Friday night, and it goes through Sunday, how can people come out? How can they line up to be part of helping project the light show?
So we're counting on that weekend being pretty busy in the Five Points area. And one of the great joys of being in a public space like Five Points, of course, is movement. So we're hoping people move over to Oak Street at some point, which is where the Bread and Board restaurant is located. They've been kind enough to host this event and be a sponsor. And we will have a staging area in front of the Bread and Board, kind of in the little side parking area there. And you won't be able to miss us. We'll have a table. We'll have a kind of display area probably set up. And we'll be right there, and we will invite people in two at a time. It can be family, friends, neighbors, strangers, just as long as there's two people at a time. That's what it takes to activate this thing.
Well, I'm going to come by and check this out. I think our kids are going to like it, too. It sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks so much, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. And Ked Gervolta, Joash Burnett, they are the creators of Brighter Together. Friday through Sunday in Five Points, you can be part of the massive digital light show, so be part of it. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. If you missed any part of today's show, just catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8. Next on 1A. Protests across the globe erupt after President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.